Hey folks, welcome to Heartline. I'm Rita Schulte. I'm a licensed therapist in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, and I'm passionate about matters of the heart. So the idea behind the podcast is simple. I want to check the pulse on your heart by taking a look at some of the cutting-edge issues that are affecting you and the people around you, and have you consider, how in the world is all this mess called life affecting your heart? To help stir things up, we're going to be talking to some of the leading professionals in the Christian counseling and literary industry, as well as hosting discussions with real people who are struggling with real life issues. If you want to know a little bit about me, you can check out my website at siftedaswheat.com, where you can ask questions, find out about my book, listen to other podcasts, or request to be a guest on the show. So let's get going on this journey of the heart. Welcome to the first edition of Heartline. I'm really excited to be doing this podcast and giving you guys the opportunity to hear from some of the best minds in the Christian counseling world. We're going to be doing a lot of different things on the show, but most of the time I'll have guests to interview on subjects that are affecting the hearts and lives of everybody out there. To start us off today, I'm going to be my own guest. And no, it isn't because I couldn't get anybody else to do it. I just wanted you guys to get to know me a little bit and hear some of my stuff, so you'll realize that none of us have it all together. I decided I wanted to talk about a problem that's becoming more and more pervasive in our culture as the stresses of life weigh down on people. Things like the war, terrorism, the economy, people losing their jobs, women having to work and being pulled in so many different directions, all the marital problems people seem to be having, and loss. All these things and tons of others like them make life very unpredictable for people, and they create anxiety, something I personally struggled with, specifically panic disorder. You're probably thinking, great, you're a therapist, and you have an anxiety disorder? That must be a real practice builder. The truth is, I used to have an anxiety disorder, so it is a great practice builder, because if I can overcome it, I can teach other people how to. About 10 years ago, I was going through a very difficult time caring for my dad when he had bone cancer. It was a 2-year illness, and it consumed all my time and energy. My dad and I were really close, so it was a profoundly difficult time for me. There had also been a lot of other extraneous losses in my life, prior to and during my dad's illness. Then all of a sudden, I began having panic attacks. It was probably the worst time of my life. For anyone out there listening who's experienced a panic attack, you know what I'm talking about. Take my friend Chris. When he had his first panic attack, he didn't know what was happening to him, and it can be really terrifying. He told me that he was in his office with a coworker, and all of a sudden he noticed the room start to spin. His heart began to pound, and he began sweating profusely. He literally thought he was dying or having a heart attack. What did he do? He fled. He drove himself to the ER, where they did all kinds of tests on him, and never diagnosed the real problem. This left him all the more anxious and confused, and terrified it would happen again. This is not an unusual scenario. So I want to take some time in this broadcast to help our listeners understand what the heck is going on with anxiety and panic. Next week, I'm going to air the interview I did on Chris's show, Smart People Podcast, on anxiety. And I think you'll find it very informative. But for now, let's talk about how anxiety disorders develop. And let me say this before you all jump on the bandwagon that you have an anxiety disorder. You need to talk to your doctor about the symptoms you're having. Other medical conditions can create feelings of anxiety and panic, things like hypothyroidism and hypoglycemia. So make sure you check this all out. There are several things that set people up for anxiety disorders. The first is heredity. There's strong empirical evidence to show that if anxiety disorders or depressive disorders run in your family, you're more likely to develop them. Thanks, Dad and Mom. In other words, you develop the general personality type that predisposes you to become overly anxious. While heredity may cause you to be born with a more reactive nervous system, environment definitely pulls the trigger. That means even though you may not have experienced a panic attack until your late teens or 20s, some things may have been in play from the time you were little. These would include such things as overly cautious or anxious parents, excessively high standards being imposed on you by your parents or yourself, emotional insecurity. It's that attachment stuff. We're going to talk about that more with Dr. Gary Sipsey in the next few weeks. A chaotic home, an alcoholic home, a home where life was consistently unpredictable, where you were always feeling like you were walking on eggshells, never knowing when the shoe would drop. And finally, too many life stressors. So what would constitute a life stressor that could lead to panic? One would be a significant personal loss, something like a death or divorce. Going back to attachment theory, we know that when the security of our attachment figure, mom, dad, our spouse, who is our secure base and safe haven, when that bond is threatened, we are wired for alarm. So separation or loss of our attachment figure can cause extreme stress or duress. Significant life changes can also set us up for anxiety or panic. That would include moving, going away to college for the first time, having a baby, getting married, going into the military, or finding out you have a serious illness. Even drugs and stimulants can also precipitate a panic attack. Something like caffeine or too much caffeine. So you need to notice, because you can't change what you don't notice. So a hereditary vulnerability coupled with cumulative life stressors can cause stress overload and set you up for anxiety or panic. If you've just tuned in today, I'm Rita Schulte. I'm a licensed professional counselor, and today we're talking about anxiety and panic disorder. So what happens? Why are people who've had panic so terrified? Well, the first thing you should know is that panic is a normal bodily response in the face of impending danger. God created it that way so that we could respond appropriately when threatened. So we're hardwired for a fight or flight response against threat. Primed by the danger signal, your adrenal glands release a large amount of adrenaline and other neurotransmitters, such as norepinephrine, causing you to feel that same sudden jolt you feel when you slam on your brakes to avoid hitting a pedestrian. That excess adrenaline can cause an elevation in your blood pressure, your heart rate, your respiration. You might notice you're sweating or shaking, as well as your muscles contracting. Some people feel numb or pressure in their chest, leading them to think they're having a heart attack. For me, I felt like I was coming out of my own body, a sense of depersonalization, and it was terrifying. It's believed that a defect in the inhibitory receptors of the neurons in the part of the brain responsible for putting the brakes on for us simply doesn't work properly. These neurons become excited, but yet they lack the ability to calm down. With all these chemicals pulsating through your bloodstream and your central nervous system, your body takes a hit. After the attack, you may feel completely drained. That's how Chris explained it. Sometimes it takes days to recover. The other thing that's perplexing to people is that they feel like sometimes the panic attacks come out of the blue. Remember, Chris was just sitting in the office when all this started for him. He couldn't identify anything that had previously happened to upset him or cause him to panic. But as we talked a little more, it became clear that he had been under stress overload for months. We don't know what causes the dysfunction in the area of the brain responsible for panic attacks, but remember, what we do know is that stress overload is a precursor to anxiety and panic, especially when you have the personality type that lends itself to being anxious. The most effective way to deal with this is to consistently reduce the stress in your life. By now you're probably saying, "Are you kidding me? You don't know all the responsibilities I have." But the truth is this: you have to make a choice to be intentional and deliberate with this, or you're going to continue to struggle. One of the easiest ways to distress yourself is muscle relaxation and, most importantly, the breath. Deep diaphragmatic breathing or yoga breathing is the key. You need to learn to do it, and you need to practice it, and you need to notice when your anxiety level is rising. You don't want to notice it when your anxiety is at a 9 or a 10. You want to notice when it's a 1 or a 2. Then you begin the breathing. And I'm going to talk more about that on next week's show. The other critical piece is that you have to find out what your fears are. Fear drives panic. So the question I ask people is, what's the fear? What are you believing? For me, when I was having panic attacks, I believed I'd never get better. This would never go away, and I'd be put in a straitjacket and institutionalized. If that happened, I'd have to live the rest of my life isolated and sick. People who struggle with anxiety disorders make several thinking errors, one of which is catastrophizing. They attribute catastrophic outcomes to the events of life. My belief that I'd end up in an institution is a perfect example. While these negative attributions may sound ridiculous, they are not ridiculous to the person suffering. They're very real. I actually believed that, as crazy as it sounds. So you have to notice if you're doing this, and you have to catch yourself. And throughout our time together on these podcasts, you're going to hear me talk a lot about noticing, because noticing is the key to change. And you'll be surprised when you start practicing it, what you become aware of. And then maybe you would wish you hadn't. Another thinking error is overgeneralizing. That means that you falsely assume that because you had one panic attack in a particular place or situation, you're doomed to experience it always in similar situations. For example, you believe that because you panic in closed spaces, you always will. In fact, just the thought of being in a tight, confined space can cause anxiety. I have to have an MRI on my shoulder, and I don't want to do it. The very thought of it can give me anxiety. Picturing myself going into that tiny tube and being closed up freaks me out. But it's another opportunity to eat the rat, and that's exactly what I'm going to do. Finally, there's black and white thinking, like, I'll never get better, I can't handle this, I'll always be sick. This thinking only intensifies anxiety and panic. There's a whole lot of middle ground in between I can't and I always can perform perfectly. We have to replace the negative self-talk with the truth. For example, a good counterstatement to my saying and believing I can't handle a panic attack would be, you know what? I can handle this. I've handled it before. In fact, I've handled a lot worse. It's unpleasant, but I'm not going to die from it. Nobody has ever died from a panic attack. I'm going to get better because people aren't institutionalized because they have panic disorder. I may not feel 100% tomorrow, but as I learn the correct skills to manage this, I will get better. And folks, I am living evidence to tell you it's true. But you have to notice what you're telling yourself. Remember, Scripture says, as a man thinketh in his heart, so he is. Emotional reasoning is the last one I'm going to talk about. And this thinking error is a really important one because people with panic disorder often believe things like this. Something's wrong with me. I'm weird. I should be able to handle this. I should be able to overcome this. I'm weak. I'm a loser. They conclude that because they feel weak, or they feel like a loser, it means they are weak or they are a loser, when nothing could be farther from the truth. It takes a lot of courage and faith to face your fears and overcome them. It's a lot easier to bury your head in the sand and pretend you're okay when you're not. So notice your self-talk. Ask yourself, is what I'm telling myself helpful? Is it helping me get what I want? Or is it fueling my anxiety? Then you have to choose to set your mind and set it on the truth of God's Word. Okay, so when people have anxiety or panic about something, what's the first thing they want to do? Avoid it. You're afraid of flying, so you don't get in an airplane. You're afraid of heights, so you stay low to the ground. You're afraid of needles, so you don't go to the doctor. What's the worst thing you can do? Avoid. You have to identify the fear, and you have to face it. How? Through gradual exposure. I'll use myself again as an example. A few years ago, my husband decided to become a pilot. Great. I didn't want to get into a small airplane. But after I realized this wasn't a passing fancy with him, I knew I had to eat the rat. So, I had the opportunity to fly with some folks who had a bigger plane than Mike's, and I took it. Not only did I take it, I got in the cockpit with the pilot, and we flew to the Bahamas. I know. Rough life, Rita. Then I was able to start flying with my husband. Part of my fear that I identified was that I didn't like the physical sensations I got in the airplane. I'd freak out when it would do certain things or make certain noises. But as I gradually exposed myself to it, I began to experience what we call habituation. If I threw you in my swimming pool right now in the middle of May, the water would be really cold. But what would happen if you swam around for 5 or 10 minutes? Right, you would get used to it. So, I got used to all the noises and the sensations in the airplane because I constantly exposed myself to them, so they weren't so scary anymore. Ultimately, I had to face the fear of dying and the airplane crashing, but I decided that if God held my last breath in His hands, I had to either trust Him with my life or not trust Him. If you or someone you love is suffering from anxiety or panic disorder or obsessive compulsive disorder or post-traumatic stress, please encourage them to see a therapist, one who specializes in these types of disorders. Healing isn't only possible. With God's help, it's highly probable. But you need to get help. Many people think they can manage this on their own, and maybe some can. But the majority of success stories come from folks who have learned and practiced the skills necessary to overcome panic and have uncovered their fears and belief, and with God's help, changed or modified those beliefs. I hope this information has been helpful today. Tune in next week as I air my interview on Smart People Podcast with Chris and John. If you like the show, go to my website and let me know. There you can follow me on Twitter and Facebook. You can also ask counseling questions or request to be a guest on the show. It's Sifted, S-I-F-T-E-D, as W-H-E-A-T, wheat.com. It's the name of my book. And remember, it's your heart. Keep it alive. Check the pulse. That's a wrap for our show today. Thanks so much for joining us. And remember, it's your heart. Keep it alive. Check the pulse.